hopeful, regardless of the outcome. Boost the positive energy without one. Sorry by the jab, I'm on a holy field. I'm bearing fruit with demons, try to eat them like Yoshi meal. I piss them off the Batman like Falcone deals. Jungle full of predators, I know how Mowgli feels. So I got the fire, refuse to live in fear. I can spot suppliers in a restaurant. Call me privately.
Welcome to episode 165 of the Permaculture Pimp Cast, where PIMP stands for Permaculture is My Passion. The only PIMP cast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, and practical living. Ordinarily, I would say, how you doing, honey? But she's downstairs working on some other stuff right now, so I'm flying solo today, and it's good to be with you. As always, this episode brought to you by Hickory Ridge Soap from twooldcrowshomestead.com. Turn that simp into a pimp. Bam! Heaven's Harvest. 10% off with promo code PERMA. And remember, handle all your preparedness needs yourself. Anything you can't source, go check out Heaven's Harvest. And don't forget that discount code PERMA, P-E-R-M-A. And if you would like to tip a pimp, go check us out on the Fountain app. You can listen to all your podcasts over there. Remember, you start with the Pimp Cast. And while you're over there, if you'd like to drop some SATs on some PIMPs, you know where to do it, right there on the Fountain app. So check us out over there as well. All right, I'm going to jump right into the farm news. Well, like everybody else, you know, well, when I say everybody else, at least around here, we've had some weird kind of inclement weather. It seems to be the lay of the land these days, but it's all good. But I'm out there dropping extra hay bales to the sheep. Remember, they're in this area of silvopasture. For those that don't know, it's basically the easiest way to say it is basically a combination of your tree crops along with pasture. So you want just enough sunlight in there to be able to stimulate some of the growth of the grass underneath. Well, if you have good quality soil, you should get good grass, but this area was so incredibly decimated, and I mean absolutely decimated, from the previous owners from, what, 5 years ago? And we're still trying to dig our ways out of it. It's destroyed so many trees over there. We had to knock a bunch of them down. But check this out. The soil is still jacked up from the feet up. So that means we got to go Greg Judy 101. So what does that mean? Well, we did a video about it not long ago. And it's, for me, you know, in other areas, if you have access to a tractor or you got that little contraption that Greg Judy has where you can roll out a round bale, yeah, that's all well and good. But I'm telling you what, you ain't, look, unless you got a four-wheel UTV, you're not getting through this terrain that way. So it means I'm going to be carrying bales up the side of this mountain and dropping them to the sheep. Whereas in the area they are right now, they're on a three-day rotation. They're basically in the paddock for 3 days. And so ordinarily, I would drop a bale in the morning, one at night. And like I said, all together with what they're getting out of there, the first day or two, they might eat a half a bale. And then as it goes on, they might eat a little bit more than half, but they really don't do more than that. The real reason of doing it is being able to rejuvenate that ground out there. Look, I'm not at all, and I've talked about it before, I don't care about sustainability, and neither should you. You know, it's like that doctor, that Indian doctor said, it's no measure of health to be well-adjusted to a sick society. So I'm not trying to sustain anything. I'm all about the regeneration. And that's exactly what dropping them hay bales up there is doing. It's regenerating that soil. I'm putting down a carpet blanket. They're going to eat what they want. They're going to poop on it. They're going to walk on it. They're going to pee on it. They're going to stomp it in, which is fantastic, especially when you have ground that's jacked up. In just about every remedy, when you have messed up pasture or silvopasture systems, believe me, I've seen it. If you doubt me, don't go spend a lot of money on hay. Don't do that. And by the way, the hay I'm using hasn't been sprayed with Grazon or anything like that. Just take a patch of some of your nastiest stuff out there. Just go get a few hay bales, put them out there, I don't know, fluff them up, make them pretty thick, and then just watch what happens in the season. Don't believe me? Just watch. Go out there, take a single hay bale, spread it out in a particular area, and then watch what comes back. You might be shocked. It might take longer than a season, depending on how jacked up it is. But later on, you know, you're going to see massive, massive improvements. So you're thinking, well, why would you spend money on that? Well, it's an investment. If I can get that nasty Chinese silvergrass to not come up, number one, that's a win, big win. nothing needs it but a water buffalo. And then two, if I'm able to go out there and provide myself pasture area that the sheep can graze, it's like putting money in the bank for your future self. It's like buying what a lot of people are doing right now. They're buying silver and they're putting it back, realizing that the U.S. dollar is only going to keep losing and losing and losing. Ultimately, it's going to drop, but it's a way of hedging yourself. Well, that's exactly what you're doing when you're dropping these hay bales. So think about these other ways of doing these things. And believe me, it makes all the difference in the world. All right. Yesterday, it was raining out here. It was a combination of everything. Rain, snow, nasty, you name it, sloppy, muddy. But I went out there in the rain and I pruned for hours. Michelle barely, she didn't even know where I went. I mean, I left out, I think I started at about 10:30, maybe 11. And I didn't get done until about 4. And I would go out there. And here's how I did it, y'all. When you get a lot of trees to prune, believe me, you're hearing from somebody that's made this mistake. If you're pruning a lot of trees, do not do them all at once. My recommendation is I do no more than maybe 3 at a time. And then I stop, I sit in the trunk. Yeah. Sit in the truck. And then I sit there and I think about something else for a while, or maybe work on, it's not like I can get on the internet because if you're not on the Wi-Fi here at the house, you just don't have it around here. There's no cell phone signals. There's nothing like that up in these mountains. So I sit in that truck, you know, either do deep breathing, meditate, or just think. Sometimes I'm doing Bible verses. Sometimes I'm doing my memorization, whatever it is. I get myself away from it for a minute and then turn back around when I feel like, okay, now let me move on to the next tree. Okay, what do I know about this particular tree? Because if you don't take that time and think about what it is you're doing, if you don't, I'm telling you, you're going to mess up. Sit there, look at it, and then after you're all done, go back and look at everything you just did. I guarantee you're going to see it at a different angle you didn't see before. And, oh, shoot, I missed that part when I was clearing the chimney. Oh, shoot, here's a branch that, you know, really shouldn't have been in there. It's probably going to be a problem, child, but I didn't see it. So don't do too many at one time. In fact, I'm doing this like a month later than I ought to. And it looks like everything's just decimated out there. All the black locusts, I basically pollard every last one of them, which is basically cutting them off about neck level. And they're going to, depending on what camp you choose, and I've talked about a little bit of this on Patreon, depending on what camp you use when it comes to pruning, those trees are either going to shed their roots that's commensurate with the amount that you cut off, or what's left of that tree is shooting down exudates, basically a substance, just say it that way. And then all of your bacteria and fungi are getting a shopping list, and it's telling the tree's basically telling the bacteria and fungi, look, you want what I got, which is basically, if you guys want to be fed by me, here's what I need from you. And they get a shopping list. They go out there and get that stuff. That's why those trees come back so well. So which camp you choose, which one's right, I tend to think the latter. And it works. I mean, look, y'all, it works. So let's see what else we got going on around here. I've talked about it just about in every single podcast as of late. And there's a reason I'm doing it. Not because I'm trying to sell anything, folks. I hope you don't ever think that. Look, I see the business I do as a byproduct of just doing good work. That's been a great business model for us ever since we started, and I'm not going to change it. So the reason I preface what I'm about to say by saying that is that I got that freeze dryer running day and night. In fact, I got some beef stew that's ready to come out of there. And I'll be honest with you. The whole reason for running that thing the way I'm doing is because I can see the writing on the wall. I mean, it looks like we're doing everything. Supposedly, we had some troops killed over there. Who actually did it? I don't know. But no matter where the bombs fall, we're going to blame Iran. So that's just another little node in this conflagration that they want to begin. And what does that mean for you and me? Look, if this thing goes to the full-scale war over there, gas is going to be through the roof. You got people like Max Egan, wicked smart. And he kind of breaks it down this way. Everything. I'll put it this way. You're listening to this podcast right now. You're driving down the road, or maybe you're in the house. You might be working on your farm. No matter what you're doing, everything on your body and every means you're listening to this through came by way of a truck. Do I need to say anything else? So if that truck made it come there, that truck obviously ran on fuel. Okay. Now, all of a sudden, we got a massive conflagration in the Middle East. All those trucks that run up and down the road, what do you think that's going to do to the price of fuel? Everything. I mean, you name it. Is that actually the way it's going to go down? Look, I don't know. Who can even begin to fathom the scams and schemes of these scoundrels in D.C. and around the world right now? Some of the most wicked people in the world. Who even knows? But at the end of the day, look, I see the problem as the solution. So that's the problem. So what's my solution? I got a bunch of meat in the freezer that I need to do something with. Yeah, it's in the freezer, but I'm going to be processing more animals. Going to be a cow in there before long. Got to make room for that. I got meat in there, like things like your hocks and stuff like that. Maybe you don't eat them that often. I don't. Well, why not take the meat off of it, make a stew, freeze dry it? So I'm knocking out several birds at one stone. I'm making room in the freezer, which is good. What else am I doing? Oh, shoot. I'm putting back meals, full meals, for when anything and everything jumps off, because that's exactly what they're trying to do. So I'm not going to beat that dead horse, but if you do need a freeze dryer, we got them listed down below. I'm just telling you what I'm doing, folks, and I'm hoping. I had a conversation with Eric Sider earlier today. We were talking about some of his test results of that bomb compost he's making out there. He sent us a sample. Michelle tested it, and it's off the chain, as usual. What else do you expect from Eric Sider? And we're sitting there talking about this and that, and then, you know, we got into the chicken tractor on steroids. And both of us were kind of, he's done his version of it, I've done my version of it, and we're sitting here scratching our heads like, this is one of the best food-producing modalities probably ever created, in my view. And I think Eric, to a certain extent, or maybe to a great extent, would agree with that. And we're sitting there scratching our heads like, why aren't people doing this? Why aren't communities? I mean, I've done more playlists than anybody else on the planet regarding that system that Jeff Lawton created. And still very few people. Now, some people have done it. You know, my friends in Kentucky, they've done it. Eric Sider, obviously, he's doing it. Strand Farm, they've done it. Two Old Crows Homestead, they've done it. Jason at Kentucky Sustainable Living, he's done it. But outside of that, there's a few others that bear mentioning, but you would think in these times that people would take some of these modalities where you can basically produce all the meat, all the eggs, all the compost, which is basically producing all your vegetables, putting it all in one awesome system that could literally change the world if more people adopt it. So if you haven't seen it, we got playlist after playlist after playlist over there on YouTube. Okay, maybe you don't do it that way. You can even do it statically. Check out Eric Sider, what he's done with it. You can do it in a small area. You can scale this thing up and down like Carl Hammer. He's done it. He does it on a big scale. But you can do it on my scale. You can do it on a smaller scale. There's so many different ways you can scale these things. But folks, if you don't know about it, I highly encourage you, go check it out. Look, I'm not trying to drive you to my YouTube channel. Believe me, YouTube ain't paying us anything anyway. Trust me on that one. So I'm trying to evangelize this information. Whether, like I said, the freeze dryer or whether it's the chicken tractor on steroids, I am trying to do. Folks, I don't know. Look, we got no shortage of the prognosticators of doom out there. I mean, there's a lot of them. No shortage of them. Whole lot of homestead channels that used to be exclusively homesteading. Now they've kind of, because they know that YouTube algorithms favor fear. Oh, shoot, I'm going to become a preparedness person overnight. And a lot of the information they've given you is bunk. Trust me, I was into preparedness long before I got into permaculture. I've been at this a long, long time. And some of the stuff these people tell you, some of their places I've actually been to, and they're not doing what they say they do. Some of these people are just downright frauds. But forget about them for a minute. Look, things are getting real. It's going to get realer. So you might want to think about ways to insulate yourself. All right. Don't have a download from Pastor Lime, but I do want to tell you that Redemption Shield, 10% off with promo code PERMA. All those grounding mats I've told you about, all the grounding sheets that we use every single night. I plug it in every single night. We're grounded to a ground rod out there every night, getting the sleep of my life every single night. Even though there are times when the homestead honey is a little bit, you know, she gets cabin fever. She starts to cook things that she has absolutely no intention of eating. In the past, I kid you not, before I started grounding myself at night when I sleep, I would wake up with a splitting headache every single time I ate anything sweet. Now, yeah, it's not a license to to eat a bunch of things I shouldn't be eating. But I will say that every single night when I ground, look, not a headache in sight. They even got shielding stuff for your cell phones, Faraday bags, you name it. Of all the people I reached out to, they were the only ones to say, yep, go ahead and test it. You find anything wrong, let us know. Anyway, go check them out over there at redemptionshield.com. 10% off with promo code PERMA. All right. Here's some good news, y'all. I took my time on this one. And these are good news stories that really, really kind of hit home to everybody out there. It should be, I would think, everybody in the audience out there. And it's, believe it or not, all related to farming. So check this out. Good news number one. French farmers are tripping, and barely anybody in the mainstream media is covering it. If they are, they're basically twisting it a certain way. I've been really staying on top of this. Man, y'all can say what you want about the French, but I love those people. In fact, it's like everybody always talks bad about the French and saying they're rude. Man, every French person I've ever met has been really, really polite, highly intelligent. Same thing about Russians. You know, they tell us all these bad things about Russians. Believe it or not, I've known quite a few Russians. I've known them well. I've even worked with them hand in hand, and they had some of the best sense of humor I've ever seen in my life. But anyway, the French, I'm loving France. Man, I can't wait to visit one of these days because these French farmers paralyzed routes into Paris in a tractor's protest. Well, they basically put a blockade in on the way to Belgium. And the thing I love most, now they, okay, I'm not, okay, McDonald's, this is where I think they're kind of losing their way a little bit. Okay, I'm not down for vandalizing anybody's property unless it gets to that. But, you know, French Revolution, man, it's in the blood. These people ain't playing when it comes to their food. Now, Macron's beach house, these guys basically parked all these. I mean, those tractors are dressed right there on the beach, facing his doggone vacation property out there, you know, while he's telling everybody, let them eat cake. And by the way, he's over in what, Taiwan or somewhere else. I don't know where he was, but he wasn't in the country when they really started kicking it off. Man, they lied those tractors up on the beach. They're out there spraying. Look, they are spraying manure on government buildings. I'm down for that. You know what I really love about what they're doing over there is that there's not one single bit of violence that's kicked off. I mean, they're causing a little bit of mayhem, but they are literally dropping hay bales across 8 lanes of interstate over there. And they're opening up hay bales, going into McDonald's. Yeah, you know, the French, man. Where do you think we learned about cuisine? Who owns, I mean, all the famous sauces, where do they came from? Everything came out of France. Man, they will burn you down. You start growing GMO crops over there. Man, the French don't play when it comes to their food. Man, like I said, they're spraying manure up on government buildings, dropping hay bales, burning pallets, tires. They're like, okay, global warming, I got some warming for you. They're setting tires on fire in the town square. These people aren't playing. All right, good news number two. German farmers are doing the same exact thing. Yeah. So they're over there, they're really tripping on the basis of the fact that they're like, okay, well, the official story goes German farmers block roads with tractors in protest over agriculture policies. Well, when you get down to brass tacks to what those policies are, it's basically Agenda 2030. Never heard of that? How about Agenda 21? Yeah, when that came and went, they said, well, let's go ahead and do Agenda 2030. Basically, they no longer get their subsidies, just like American commodities farmers do when it comes to, you know, the diesel discount they get. They're like, man, you've already put all these different things on us. We ain't playing this. So now the German farmers, I mean, they phased out all the tax breaks for these guys. And you got to be asking yourself, why? This is done by intention. I'll come to that in a minute. Good news number three, Dutch farmers doing the same exact thing. They're dumping manure. It's like they all kind of got together and said, okay, how are we going to do this? And it's done, according to these articles, with, quote, military precision. How about that? Yeah. They had to make sure they put that part in there. Military precision, which to a certain extent, it does seem like there's a little bit of collusion there. And they're telling the people in in the Netherlands, you got way too much nitrogen. All right. 78% of our atmosphere is nitrogen. Really? 78% of our atmosphere, the air you're breathing, 78% nitrogen. Those nitrogen fixers I just talked about down there in the food forest, what do? They snatch nitrogen out of the atmosphere, put it in nitrogen-fixing nodules that are down in the roots, much to the benefit of not only the soil, but the neighboring plants. That's what a nitrogen fixer does. And they gave this BS a couple of years back to the Dutch farmers. Now this stuff is spilling on over into Poland. They're doing this very same thing. I know that's a different article altogether. But look, folks, what I'm trying to get at here, they've known ever since Alexander the Great that you only need three things to subjugate a population. And I'm talking like general population. Food, entertainment, and a reasonable expectation of security. If you lose one of those things, you're going to have social unrest. You lose two out of those three, you get a French Revolution. I'm dead serious, y'all. What was it? French Revolution 1789 or 87? Man, I could be all wet on that, but somewhere around that time. I mean, what caused it? Well, you had an economic, French was basically up to their eyeballs. They supported the American Revolution. So they were on the ropes on that one. They were still reeling from the French Indian War. Basically the rich had plenty, the poor had very little. And then you had the Enlightenment ideas of people like Voltaire, Rousseau, John Locke. All that happened at about the same time. But the thing that really, really, really kicked that thing off when you get down to it, food shortages, food, entertainment, and a reasonable expectation of security. You maintain those three like you have right now in the United States of Amnesia. Essentially, you may hear grumbling, but nobody's going to revolt. You lose one, you got problems. You lose two, you got to revolt. Right now, and actually, it could be argued of those three, when you lose the food, because that was really the biggest thing that kicked off the French Revolution. I mean, when people are starving, they will do unbelievable things, and it usually happens at the top. So now let's kind of take totality of what we're talking about here. You got the French farmers tripping, you got the German farmers tripping, you got the Dutch farmers tripping, you got Poland tripping. That's right there in Europe, and you got rumblings of other people out there. All of these policies that were intentionally put in place to basically stick it to the little man. That's exactly what they're doing. So I came across this article. Now, this, I know I'm spending a little more time on this, but I'm doing it for a reason. So this one came from the Committee to Unleash Prosperity. They got an article on there. It's called Them Versus Us, and us is spelled U.S. Now, the executive summary basically goes like this, and I'm going to give you the cliff notes of it. They basically polled the 1% of people, okay? Then they took a commensurate number, and they polled the people like us. Here's what the executive summary basically says. In a time when, now there's several bullet points here, I'm just going to read it the way it comes out. In a time when most Americans have suffered a real loss in take-home pay, 74% of the elites say that they are financially better off than they were in the past versus the 20% of all Americans. So 74% of the elites, the 1%, say they're better off. Bullet point number two. Nearly 6 in 10 say there is too much individual freedom in America. Next one. More than 2/3, and it's 67%, favor rationing of vital energy and food sources to combat the threat of climate change. This is all coming from the elites, y'all. Executive summary. In stark contrast to the rest of the United States, 70% of the elites trust the government to do the right thing. Next one. 2/3 say that teachers and other educational professionals should 100% decide what children are taught rather than letting parents decide. Yeah, there's more to it. Like they're basically saying banning SUVs, gas stoves, air conditioning, even though these people are driving or flying around in private jets. Wow. About 6 in 10 have a favorable opinion of the so-called talking professions, such as lawyers, lobbyists, politicians, and journalists. And dig this one. 84% job approval of Joe Biden. And this is the executive summary of the elite. Now, go back to what I just spoke about a moment ago. All of this stuff happening at exactly, precisely the same time. Nord Stream pipeline in Germany. You know, places like BASF, basically on the fritz. Almost no products on any boats are moving for the most part that aren't being charged four times what they would normally cost. We're seeing something of a delayed effect, y'all. Do you see the tapestry I'm weaving here? Do you see where I'm going with all this? I'm not trying to sow fear. I'm sowing preparedness and the need for it and why you need to get your poop in a group and get out there and get yourself squared away. This is why I'm talking about the chicken tractor on steroids. This is why I'm talking about pruning an orchard. This is why I talk about growing your own food force tactically, if at all possible. This is why I'm talking about putting back food. This is why I'm talking about all these things, y'all, because the prostitute media is never going to tell you what I just spoke. Look, folks, we better wake up and smell the corruption. We're all going to fall asleep drinking the hemlock, you dig?
Hey, Eric Sider here with your PimpCast tip of the day. Today's tip, effective working groups. In any human group endeavor, there are practical and effective or impractical and ineffective ways to manage a complex system. Impractical, frustrating, and time-consuming systems are those governed by large boards, assemblies, or groups of seven or more people. They utilize agendas, proposals, votes, or consensus. Consensus in particular is an endless and pointless affair. These lead to either the tyranny of the majority or the tyranny of the minority. An essential strategy for rapid and flexible action is to limit the number of people responsible for any one area of action or task. An ideal number is between 1 to 3 people who manage independently. They work towards a general plan with completion dates and progress updates made public. We can form multiple groups of 1 to 3 people who are responsible for management of a specific area of activity. This approach ensures that meetings are few and that no one person or group has rights of decision over other functions or groups. Only in the initial planning do people need to assign or choose functions. Once chosen, no group meetings for business are necessary. Each group or subgroup is small enough to reach fast agreements and know each other's movements and work. No consensus beyond that of an initial ethical and value consensus is necessary. Everyday decisions are made by small groups. This way, every person who wants to work controls their work, and non-involved people have no say. You can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Eric Sider, and if you're in need of permaculture t-shirts or remote permaculture consultation and design, head over to ericsider.com.
That's my dog right there, y'all. Eric is knocking it out of the park, and we even talked about that a little bit on the phone as well. Look, I remember when they did that Occupy Wall Street. I saw it as fertile ground for me to go down there to swoop up some of those wayward people. At the time, I had to go to Kansas City to go work in radio. So on the way there, I'd get done my regular job, and then I'd go to the station and work there in the radio. And they had to occupy Wall Street, where they were basically occupying a place downtown in Kansas City. And it was this never-ending, idiotic consensus model. And I was seeing it as fertile fruit to go out here and talk about liberty to a lot of these kids. Because the news and people like Glenn Beck were saying certain things about these people. And then, of course, as always, they would find the wayward person who's going to be pooping on a sidewalk or some disgusting thing like that. And that was the one they would focus on. But if you spend any time boots on the ground out there, you'd realize that these were just young people that really didn't have a whole lot of direction. And so those of us in the very, very liberty crowd are out there, with those were the circles I ran in. And we'd go out there, maybe drop off some hot dogs and try to talk to these kids. I mean, literally, that's what I did. And I spent, you know, a fair amount of time out here trying to talk to some of these people and, you know, see what direction we get. And then I realized, just like Eric's talking about there, this never ending, it had to be like 100% consensus. Yeah. Try to go to lunch with a group of people and figure out where you're going to go to do that. Now try to figure consensus models and something as a little more complex, you know, like a Occupy Wall Street thing. It came and went, it fell down. It was, some of the people had the best of intentions in there. Some of them didn't. And it didn't take you long to find out. As a little side note, I remember there was one little thing, and I'm saying this as a little side note, and folks, I think it's important. It really has nothing to do with that. They were going to have a march one day. Okay. And there was a lot of people I knew that were going to be on that march. They're basically going to walk through downtown Kansas City. There were a number of guys that showed up. They were all wearing bandanas over their face. Nobody had ever seen them before. And there they were at this Occupy Wall Street march. Well, they go out doing the march. I didn't go with them. I basically stayed right there in the section where they were. And I was basically going to supply water and hot dogs and whatever else and try to get through to some of these people that really didn't have a whole lot of direction. Well, turns out that all the people wearing bandanas that nobody had ever seen before, as they were going down, for some reason, they started kicking on shop doors as the march was going. One of the people I knew, I almost said his name, but I'm not going to. He's actually one of the guys that got me into the butcher's trade. Real good friend of mine. He goes over there. Now, this guy's like 6'7", 6'8", somewhere around there. So he's a big dude, and he's not to be trifled with. He goes over there, snatches the bandana off this guy's face, and one of the people in the crowd says, "Hey, that's the cop that works down in the plaza." And then he and all the other guys wearing bandanas hit the bricks. They started running down the road. So basically, they embedded cops in there to be agents provocateurs, as they would say in France. Yeah, agent provocateurs. That's exactly what it was. Witnessed it right there. So I'm saying that was at a Occupy Wall Street march where the local cops were embedded into that group to try to poison the whole well. Think that same sort of thing might have happened on January 6th? I digress. I think you get the point. All right, y'all. Before we get into the main topic, I want to remind you, EMP Shield, been a journeyman electrician for a whole lot of years, y'all. I've installed a whole lot of transient voltage surge suppressors, say that 10 times, in a lot of different places. Car plants, you name it. There ain't even a close second to EMP Shield, y'all. They didn't hit me up. I went to them to be an advertiser on this show. Their product is off the chain. They got it for your car. They got it for everything. They got it for your solar generator. They got it for your generators. And most importantly, I think they got it for the house. Not only does this thing repel multiple EMP shocks, but here, check this out. The biggest thing it does is protect your bacon if you ever get hit by a lightning strike. If it gets past that EMP shield and Kentucky fries your stuff downstream, 25 G's is what they're going to cover you for. So check out EMPShield.com. Use promo code PERMA for $50 off. All right, let's get into the real topic here. You know, every time, as a little side note, every time Eric drops, one of his, tips for the show, I'm always wishing that I used him for my show prep. Because where my mind was automatically changing, I'm like, dude, that would be a great topic. Why didn't I talk about that? That'd be a wonderful topic. So we'll have to get Eric back on. Maybe we do a little compilation of all the different things and maybe discuss them and kind of get his both of our point of view on these things. But yeah, so he's not the best for anything, y'all. Remember, you need those remote consultations and the ball in this t-shirt. I'm wearing his nitrogen fixer shirt right now. If I could play these on YouTube, you'd actually see it. Let me get a drink of water. All right, so the main topic, shortcuts everywhere. Before I get into it, folks, I just want to say one of my heroes, probably the guy that has inspired more people to farm in history, is Joel Salatin. One of his famous quotes to me is, "You can't Google experience." He's right. I went through this course the other day with Tony Robbins, and I do a lot of courses. A lot of them, believe it or not, I'm going through them as I'm doing my work. Now, there are some things you got to visually look at. Yeah, so those things like doing Jack Spirko's latest course or Stefan Subkoviak's latest course, for the most part, you got to have a visual component there. So those are things I can't listen to while I work. But self-help stuff like that, I can. And having been through some of his stuff before, read his books, you know, one of the ones sitting on my shelf down there, I think it's one of his first, maybe his second books. It's called Awaken the Giant Within. Okay, he describes in there, and I never forgot this, and it's what I do. It's what I do whenever I want to accelerate my learning and not look for shortcuts. Prime example that he uses in the book. Let's say you want to be better at public speaking. Okay. And let's say you go out and engage yourself to do a public speech every month. So how much experience do you collect in the base in a year? Well, once a month. Okay. So you got 12 speaking engagements, right? So that's what you got in the basis of a year. Let's say you were to double that, 24. Let's say twice a month you were to go to speak somewhere. So in the space of a year, you have, you know, 24 speaking engagements in 1 year. What if you were to give a speech every single day for a month? And let's say you gave the speech in a mirror. Let's say you practiced in a mirror. How much experience would you have in 30 days? You'd have a year's experience based on those numbers, right? A year's experience just by doing the very act over and over and over, condensing the window in which you perform. What if you did this every day for a year? Good night. I think you know where I'm going with this. So what brought me to this are the people that are reaching out to me. And it seems like every single time I turn around, it's either sometimes in the comment section of a YouTube channel or whether it's people emailing me asking for a shortcut or a faster way to do something. Look, I understand a lot of people are on edge right now. There's a lot of fear going around in the zeitgeist. I get it. But some of these things just take time, but you can condense the window by doing it more. I mean, you name what it is, y'all. This is the very thing I do to get myself better. In the beginning of this podcast, okay, I've done radio before, so podcasting wasn't too far out of the wheelhouse for me because I already have a background in doing live talk radio, which is essentially exactly what I do. I've taken the live radio format and I brought it into podcasting because I don't have time to edit. It's just me and Michelle around here. I got to be able to get on here, you know. If I have notes, a lot of times, you know, I have very minimal notes. A lot of this I'm relying on my own cabeza and also my experience as a talk radio host. But I got a lot of years working in the talk radio space to translate it into the podcast. But when I first got into the podcast thing, listen to the earliest things, y'all. I was like a pig on roller skates. I really was. You know, I was fumbling around. Things didn't go right because I insisted on doing this live format, didn't want to do the editing. So I'm like, okay, man, I'm doing it once a week. Okay. I don't really have the time, but I want to improve it, my craft. How do I do it? And I'm not talking in terms of the bells and whistles, the other things. This is one awesome thing that I learned from the great Jack Spearco is that honestly, your content should be so solid that you don't need those things. And I don't. And honestly, the people that, and if I feel like I do, well, then maybe I'm doing the wrong thing. But how did I improve? How did I accelerate my learning by going from 1 day a week to 2 days a week and then accelerated even more by doing interviews? So that makes it 3 days a week when I do interviews. So listening to the me that started this compared to the me now are two very, very, very different people because I didn't look for a shortcut. I just accelerated the learning. It's the same sort of tactic you learn when you learn accelerated learning, even from a scholastic point of view. Repetition, repetition, repetition. Can I add another piece of experience in there? So we do it just about in every part of our lives. You know, like I said, when it comes to farming through YouTube, I'm getting a lot of messages. Hey, and the thing that honestly does drive me crazy is if you had watched the whole video, I actually answered your question in there, but you got about a minute into it. Then you wrote the question down, but you didn't really listen. Well, it was already in there. But it's the ones that are saying, hey, I don't have time to learn this. Can I speed it up? The answer is a resounding no. What you can, the only part of that equation that you can speed up is the number of times you're doing it. That's why the learning curve and the chicken tractor on steroids. And I do suggest that you have at least a little bit of working knowledge, you know, do a couple of 18-day compost piles. That would be a very good advantage to you. Get them down successfully. Okay. Raise chickens the conventional way before you try this. This is of all the chicken raising methods, it's not difficult, but it does have a higher degree of complexity than just going out there throwing stuff to your chickens. Well, how do you get better at it? How did I get better at it? Jeff Lawton had a way that he was doing it, but I needed to adapt it to my situation. So what did I do? Instead of having one chicken tractor on steroids, I went out there and got three. And believe me, I worked myself to the bone flipping the compost in three different chicken tractors on steroids, trying to find a way that worked for me. And then I found that out. And then I did it more and more and more and more. More than anybody on planet Earth, I've put my hand on that chicken tractor on steroids from the time Jeff came out with it until this day. I'm not saying this to brag, but I am saying it because it is a fact. I am willing to state on record, I am the world's foremost expert on my version of the chicken tractor on steroids. Why? Experience. I didn't look for a shortcut. There is no shortcut. You can't make, technically you can make the microbes work a little faster, but you ain't going to kick it under 18 days. You dig? And then under that model, it's 30 days roughly before it's ready, depending on which version of it you do. But there is no shortcut. Accelerate your learning. Same thing when it comes to health. Many of us are out there and look at the pill industry, like that Ozempic and the other things. Yeah, they haven't come down on them like a ton of bricks, but think about all the other weight loss drugs that have hit the market. Name one where the pharmaceutical company, do the pharmaceutical companies have a good reputation to begin with right now? I digress. The point being, instead of going out there saying, okay, I got high blood pressure, or I have this ailment, I have that ailment, what can I do? What free modalities did the permaculture pimp daddy tell me about that I can try before I go out there getting on these pharmaceutical drugs? Have I tried grounding? Let me go try that. Let's try it several times a day. Maybe I need to ground my sheets and sleep in a grounded environment. Okay. Maybe I need to get up just a little bit early, get some morning sun. Tons of benefits on that. Do I need to put the phone down so I can make myself go to sleep on time? You know, I've talked about modality after modality after modality, all these different hacks I'm personally doing, you know, fasting, intermittent fasting. I've talked about this stuff extensively, but guess what? There ain't no shortcut. Money. Good night, man. If I had a nickel for all the people that are getting in this space, I told you a little while ago, I see money, and I always have, as a byproduct. Ever since I started my first business, I always thought this, and I learned it later from other people that are very, very successful, people that I've had the very awesome opportunity to work around and be around and learn from. And I've adopted it early on without ever being taught that. I thought, good night, man. If I just do a really, really good job, I think the money will come. I didn't early on, and we're talking like, you know, in the 90s, early on, I was like, okay, I had this business that I started with my friend, and it was a insulation business. And we were at the same time working as apprentices in the IBEW, you know, apprenticeship program. That's a 5-year apprenticeship, working to be electricians. And on the side, not only that, I was going to college, and in addition to that, started an insulation business. And I always thought that if I just do a really, really, really good job, then maybe they'll tell somebody about what we did. And it worked. It happened. And yes, we were blowing up. Got to the point at one point where we're like, okay, maybe we ought to drop out of the apprenticeship and start doing this full time. And then lo and behold, maybe, you know, this was probably a good thing. All of a sudden, it was like we were in Oklahoma City, and I remember another contractor came into town, and they basically had a bunch of illegals in there, and they basically put us out of business because I couldn't even buy the materials for what they were doing with these jobs. Come to find out, had I stuck it out, had I kept at it, the market would have decided and discovered that these guys weren't even doing what they're saying. So let's say they're supposed to put 30 bags of insulation up in an attic. What they were doing, and they were found out having done it, is they would fluff this stuff up and rip these people off. Instead of putting 12 inches of insulation in that attic, they were putting 3. But had I stuck that business out and just weathered the storm, who knows where it would have went? because we were the only game in town doing the kind of insulation that we did. But that was a good lesson. It was a good learning lesson because the success wasn't, there was no shortcut. And I hadn't yet learned that lesson. Look, bottom line, everybody out there, not everybody, but by and large, especially some of the younger folks, are thinking that they should achieve what it took me a lifetime to try to get. I didn't do it. Nothing fell into my lap, y'all. If I have one good virtue, I know that I probably have several. My heart's a little bit too big sometimes, and I get burned. There's other times where, you know, I got my problems like everybody else. In the past, I would trust too easily. Nobody has ever called me lazy. I'm a hard worker, and when my mind takes root on something, believe me, I'm going to learn it, and I will try to be the world's subject matter expert on whatever it is I put my focus on. But it doesn't, there is no shortcut, whether it's your money, whether it's your relationships. Let me get on that one since I'm here. How many people jump at the first thing coming along? How many people get into this space? Okay, you're realizing you want to get in the homesteading space. You're going out there looking for your version of a homestead honey. You went a little too quick. There was no shortcut. And you settled for a homestead hussy. How many times does that happen? And ladies, same thing for you as well. Went out there looking for this guy. You're going to be Mr. Right. And then he wound up being Mr. Not Right Now. Or he was Mr. Right Now. And so you got yourself into buying in those things too. Instead of being patient, going out there, seeing if they have the same sensibilities, same values, same love, same dislike, same all these things. Not that everything has to fall in line, because it certainly doesn't. Michelle fills in the spots where I'm weak, and I fill in the spots where she's weak. And then we reach out to other people, like a conversation I had last night, in the areas where we are both weak. So we employ those people to help us out and coach us, perhaps, or maybe they take that part of things while we concentrate on the things that we're intrinsically good at. But there are no shortcuts. And I'm bringing this up. It's like when I, for example, it was a while back, did a video and I referenced Greg Judy. And I mentioned his name a couple of times. And then somebody in the comments says, can you provide a link to get to Greg Judy? Well, his name and his YouTube page popped up right up there on the screen. And you're looking for me to provide you a shortcut. Folks, I know this is not a popular thing to say, especially for a lot of the young people that are getting into this space out there. There ain't no easy way. I don't know how many different ways I can say this. And I don't care if it's your relationships, your money, your health, your farming, you name it. The only thing you can do, the only suggestion I can make, is that you do more of it. Accelerate your learning by doing more of it. You can condense it. There's no way to get around having to learn this, but the more you do it, you can accelerate your ability to learn it. So folks, man, I really don't know how to say this in a way that makes sense. There's a reason why I felt compelled to talk about this right now. It's like everywhere around me, there was some kids that came out here and they were, you know, looking to get into a farming apprenticeship program. I let them out. And every time I turn around, this kid, look, man, I'm over 50 at the time. I think I was, 52? Yeah, or 51. And this kid was like right out of high school. And his other buddy, I think he was 18, 19, 20 maybe. I don't know. And they're wanting to shadow me. And I'm literally walking with buckets up and down this mountain. And every time we turn around, that's too much work. Is there an easier way to do this? Like, no, there is no easier way to do this. Yeah, I can get a UTV out here. Then I'm going to screw up my pastures driving up and down on this thing every day. No, you got to do this by hand. And every time I turn around, they're wanting a shortcut. And these are guys that are half my, in fact, you added up the ages of both of them and they weren't as old as I am, but they're looking for a shortcut. Once again, you can't Google experience. With that said, we'll go straight in, my man, Chef Snow.
Hey, Chef Keith Snow, with your Pimp Cast tip of the day. This time, the power of pasta. Yes, I said pasta. Now, a lot of you contact me with ideas for food storage. What should I store? Well, you know, I don't know if my family likes this or that, but most people like pasta. And in an emergency, a comforting meal can be a lifesaver. Now, most people will enjoy a big old bowl of pasta. Now, it is super expensive, even if you buy the best quality. And I'm talking about bronze cut Italian pasta. If you buy the really good stuff, maybe you pay $2.50 a pound for it. So let's say you use 2 pounds of pasta with a fancy jar of sauce. You're not even making the sauce, but a fancy jar of sauce at $9, you're looking at about, you know, $2.50 per person to feed 5 people. Now that is really, really inexpensive. And you can throw something like a grilled Italian sausage in there, maybe a little salad or some garlic bread, and you have a righteous feast for not much money. Now, pasta and jarred sauce can store for a good long time. I've eaten pasta that's 10 years old, and you can't tell the difference. As long as you keep the moisture away from it, it is virtually, shelf stable for years and years and years. And a good pasta sauce will last a minimum of 2 years in a jar. And then you can always just use canned tomatoes to make a little ragu yourself. So do consider stocking up on pasta. It's one of the most inexpensive ways to put stuff aside. Just the other day, I went to Costco. I already have mountains of pasta. I don't need any more of that, but they currently have a great bottled marinara sauce. It's made in Italy. It's organic. It is really, really good. And I got 3 jars, I want to say for about $9. So I bought 2 packs of that and just pop that into the long-term storage pantry. I suggest you do the same. For more tips on how to eat from your food storage, check out foodstoragefeast.com.
That's my man. Boy, Chef Snow's going to be the only one putting on weight in the collapsed environment. Oh, my goodness, man. I remember when I was doing all those long-term fasting or when I was doing 75 hard. Man, his segment was killing a brother, let me tell you. But yeah, Food Storage Feast, y'all, go check him out. Chef Snow has some ballin' coffee, and he also has some ballin' spices, so go check him out over there. TexasBoys.com, go check them out. Fearless Podcast. They got the food for us in the box. They got honey. They got beef. You can buy half and holes and all that good stuff over there when they got it available. So go check out the Texas Boys. Plus, they're kind of like the brother podcast to this podcast, and he put out a lot of good stuff. All right. I had something of a glitch regarding my Q&A section here, but it do what it do in the words of Snoop Dogg. So I'm just going to have to fumble my way through some of this. Like I said, y'all, having a lot of email problems, and so it is what it is. Anyway, this one's from Ryan. Says, I'm writing this, and I am preparing for my last day at my full-time job and moving into the day-to-day of living life, good life away from the man. Just wanted to say that thank you for your knowledge and all that good stuff. Well, thank you so much, Ryan. Very, very kind of you. You know, at the end of the day, man, you're doing this stuff yourself. I mean, you really are, man. You and everybody else out there that are putting foot to butt, making a difference in this world. And that's how we do it, y'all. We tend to think that we got to make a giant tidal wave of an impact. No, we don't. I remember before I had this platform, before I had the YouTube channel, any of that stuff, y'all, I would talk to you ask anybody that's ever worked with me over the last 15 years, maybe 20 years, actually, probably closer to 20. Every single time we were talking about something, man, there was always some way I would try to weave in what I knew in permaculture, what I knew in preparedness. And like I said, y'all, I've been in this preparedness game a long, long time. Before I got into permaculture, it just seemed like the next step in everything. And so that's exactly where we rolled with it. All right. So let's see here. This one, the writing is a little bit small, so I'm going to do the best I can. We decided to try your advice and ask for compostable materials at a nearby restaurant in our coffee places, and it worked. They're willing to give us 15 buckets of used coffee grounds per week if we pick it up a few times a week. Okay, that is definitely a win. Okay, in a nutshell, basically, they're wondering Yeah. How do you do this in a small system? Okay. So essentially, depending on the time of year, if it's in the winter, you're going to, obviously your coffee grounds are going to be part of your nitrogen. So generally in the winter months, with the recipe we're using right now, in the winter months, you're going to have about 50% carbon, and then you got nitrogen, and then some are going to say high nitrogen. Generally, you can go 50-50 in a regular, you know, with regular ambient temperatures outside. When it's cold, you might want to go 60-40, 60% being nitrogen, and then the 40 being carbon. You'll have to play with it. Every area is a little bit different, and this is one of those areas, like I was talking about, in terms of experience. There's no shortcut into making this compost. There's a lot of questions I can't possibly answer. I just simply can't do it because there's too many variables I just can't seem to get into because everything's specific to your area. So you got to play with it. You're going to have to make colossal mistakes, but you fail while daring greatly. That's how you go about doing it. So you're just going to have to play with it, but I would go a little more sparingly on the coffee grounds. And if you got your chickens in there, it might, you know, I'd ease off of it maybe a little bit more until it's more closer to the finished pile. The thing is, chickens generally, if they have something they can eat, they won't mess with the coffee grounds, but they're so small that it might be hard and difficult for them to integrate it. And you don't necessarily want them eating that. So I would generally leave the coffee grounds. I've done it before in the chicken tractor on steroids, but it was a very small, I'd say 1% of what that pile was might have been coffee grounds. So I would elect, when it comes to coffee grounds, because they're so small and it could be very easy to dip and difficult, it could be very easy to go overboard. I would probably use that coffee ground on the back end, not seeing your system. Nobody ever wants to hear it depends, but that's what we say all the time in permaculture, because we got to have all the equation. So I would go very sparingly when it gets away from the chickens. I would make that pile static, and then that might be the area where I use those coffee grounds. All right, so we got another one from Susan here. It says, thank you for your videos. Wanted to drop some information to you that furthers how Stalin, Mao, and Hitler killed so many by hijacking agricultural practices with faulty science, like climate change and green energy and all that stuff. And then she cites some people in here. During Stalin's reign, this guy basically denied biology and agriculture, like genetics, in favor of communist socialist basic ideas that guaranteed food crop failure instead of, yeah. So basically, in a nutshell, and she goes on about Sri Lanka. I mean, this is a really, really good response she has in here. Bottom line is, I'm just going to condense it this way. Whenever you get government involved in anything, count on it. Count on it. It's going to be messed up. Just remember the four modalities of spending money. Spending other people's money on other people where neither cost nor quality matter. Spending other people's money on yourself. Well, cost doesn't matter, but quality sure does. Then they're spending your money on other people. Huh, it's my money. Well, the cost is going to matter. But if it's on other people, generally, the quality less so. And I'm talking about in generalities here. Then there's the final quadrant. Spending your money on your interests. Okay? Where both cost and quality matter. So every time you get government involved, what quadrant do you think that falls in? You're spending other people's money on other people. That's why bureaucrats spend $500 on a hammer. You dig? So what do you think is going to happen when you have this kind of structure? Every single thing out there is going to fall apart as long as you got a government, as long as you got other people spending other people's money. Yeah. I want to give a hat tip to Milton Friedman out there. So Pete D., sent this picture of the St. Croix and their lambing. A little early for me, but hey, hat tip to that. I tend to like the lamb and have, you know, early spring is when we're shooting. If everything goes the way I planned, you know, we ought to start popping out lambs somewhere in March. Up here in the mountains, it doesn't get that cold. The ram got in there much quicker than we anticipated, so it's probably ideally mid-March is when we're going to start popping out lambs, and we'll just see how it goes. So some of these guys are improving. We're going to see how they do as mamas, and if they don't make the cut, they don't make the cut. And you know what that means. More meat in the freezer, more freeze-dryer running. That's how we do things. Jed says, you recently mentioned spent mushroom substrate. Do yours continue to fruit? This has become one of my favorite farm resources, And he's talking about, yeah, in a nutshell, they do continue to fruit. And when I get those, it's pretty awesome. You can fill up. I know a guy, and folks, this is a really good resource out there for some of you folks wanting to make compost piles and stuff like that. You're trying to add more fungal dominance to it. Well, you can get those mushroom blocks. And what I do, I don't use the whole blocks because it's sawdust and coconut core, stuff like that. The problem with using that in a compost pile, if you use too much of it, your pile will go anaerobic because the air can't get into the pile. So you want to be careful about how you use it. So what I do is cut off the very edges of the block where most of the mushroom spores are going to be more active. So I cut off the white edges typically and then take the rest of the block and do something else with it. There's so many different uses you could have for that. Yeah, usually they get one, maybe two fruitings out of those. And if he were to leave them, he said he would get two more fruitings, but they're not going to be so plentiful. So it just makes sense for him to take those blocks, recycle them, sell them to somebody like me where I can fill up an entire pickup truck worth. I think he charged me $50 and I filled up the entire back of my truck with that thing. So, and it was way more than I needed, but I probably could have spent, honestly, I could have spent $5 and got all I needed for a couple of piles. So yeah, that's a good way of going about it too, y'all. There are so many different ways you can go about this. This is exactly why we got the YouTube channel, is to show the how-to, and then on here, we give you the what for. Maybe we do the who, what, where, when, why, and then the how we do right there on YouTube. So hopefully this was a blessing, y'all. Y'all, man, you know it's getting late. Yeah, I'll just leave it right there. Thank you so much for your support. Until next time, stay alert, stay alive. They don't want an individual, just a carbon copy. You sitting at Manicotti, yeah, I'm talking saucy. All they want to build is a prison world full of pet Tamagotchis. The kamikaze got me out of body like I'm Goku SS3. They want to push me to the center like a cell. They want to spill up at the center of the next is me. They want me to battle, but I'm a warrior. I'm a warrior. I will never. I'm a warrior. I'm a warrior.